Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. We've gone through Dr. J. Marvin Herndon's recently published scientific paper titled Evidence of Coal Fly Ash, Toxic Chemical Geoengineering in the Troposphere, Consequences for Public Health. This is another important breakthrough in the investigative work by many researchers across the world who are active in creating awareness and ultimately stopping the ongoing atmospheric aerosol operations. Finally, a real scientist has stepped up to officially publish scientific data about the devastating effects of dumping coal fly ash into the atmosphere and its consequent impact on the delicate web of life. We also talk about the critique of this paper and the related lies that are causing the publication to retract the scientific paper. Is that such a surprise now that many of us now know that the military and various government agencies outsource these kinds of disinformation tactics? Dr. Herndon was a guest on this show 4 years ago to talk about his feature article in Dot Connector magazine. It's titled The Corruption of Science and relays disturbing evidence of how the National Science Foundation and other institutional structures have created an oppressed environment for scientists, affecting the free exchange of ideas. We talk with him now about his scientific paper that provides real evidence of coal fly ash toxic chemical geoengineering, the widespread, intentional, and increasingly frequent chemical emplacement in the troposphere has gone unidentified and unremarked in the scientific literature for years. The author presents evidence that toxic coal combustion fly ash is the most likely aerosolized particulate sprayed by tanker jets for geoengineering, weather modification, and climate modification purposes, and describes some of the multifold consequences on public health. Dr. Herndon is a geophysicist, and at the age of 30, he earned a Ph.D. degree in nuclear chemistry from Texas A&M University. Between 1975 and 1978, he engaged in postdoctoral work at the University of California at San Diego under the Nobel Prize-winning chemist Harold Urey and Hans Suess. He's the president of TransDyne Corporation in San Diego, California. He's been profiled in Current Biography and dubbed a, quote, maverick geophysicist by the Washington Post. Professor Herndon, welcome to Another News.
Thank you.
Well, in August of 2011, you were a guest on this show, and we talked about your article in the Dot Connector magazine titled The Corruption of Science, and relays disturbing evidence of how the National Science Foundation and other institutional structures have created an oppressed environment for scientists, affecting the free exchange of ideas. That in itself is a massive issue that causes systematic breakdowns within the community of scientists. And we'll get back to that because it's relevant to your current work. Here we are 4 years later from that last interview, and you've recently published a new scientific paper titled Evidence of Coal Fly Ash, Toxic Chemical Geoengineering in the Troposphere, Consequences for Public Health. We talked about your research on coal fly ash in a previous show, but could you please summarize this paper and let listeners know why it's a potential breakthrough in the research of geoengineering?
It follows on from the paper that I published in Current Science, which actually published, I think, in June 25th, that was the first paper to identify or to provide good substantial scientific evidence that points with high likelihood of success to the composition of the material that's being used in geoengineering activities that are now ramped up to full scale throughout NATO countries, throughout the British Commonwealth, and certainly across America. That is perhaps one of the best-kept secrets of the military. There's a lot of disinformation on the web, professionally orchestrated disinformation to convince people that the trails that they see in the sky are nothing more than contrails from jet aircraft. Well, contrails are relatively rare these days because of the design of the engines, because of the conditions. They have to be in very humid environments at very high altitudes and very cold circumstances. And so contrails are relatively rare, but there's been a great deal of disinformation, misinformation, intended to mislead people and officials as to the substance that is being sprayed in the troposphere, the lower part of the atmosphere. And it's become so common, if they don't look up, they can look at their television sets and look at the recent programs that were made in the last few years, look at the backgrounds, and you'll see the spray, trails. Well, this isn't ice crystals formed, the so-called jet contrails. This is something far, far worse. And this is what the scientific evidence points to. And the substance is coal fly ash. Now, when coal forms, it accumulates a bunch of trace elements, lots of different trace elements, almost all of the trace elements, including uranium and chromium and mercury and all sorts of things, arsenic. And when coal is burned by utilities, for example, the heavy ash settles out. And it used to be that the very tiny particles called fly ash just went up the chimney, up the smokestack and out. But since, I think it's 2011, throughout the U.S. and most of the Western world, it's been mandated that coal fly ash has to be trapped, electrostatically trapped, because it's a hazard. This is the substance that there's good evidence is being sprayed on a daily basis in the air that people breathe. And that was the first scientific revelation of that. And it's bad, bad stuff. Water extracts toxic chemicals from it. I mean, aluminum is, for example, locked up in rocks on the surface of the Earth, even though aluminum constitutes about 8% of the Earth's crust. It's locked up tight. It doesn't get into a chemical form and move around except under very severe acid conditions. In fact, that was one of the dangers of acid rain back in the 70s, is that it could release aluminum in a mobile form, and that could lead to forests being killed, for example. But the acid rain problem was pretty much solved by putting scrubbers on smokestacks that prevent the sulfur dioxide from being emitted. But coal fly ash, add water, and there is aluminum in a chemically mobile form, along with arsenic and chromium and chromium-6 and barium and strontium and a whole host of other toxic substances. Moreover, the coal fly ash is very fine particles. And when they're breathed, they go deep into the lungs and stay there for a long time, and the moisture extracts the toxic elements out. Well, this is the information that I published that has been hidden from ordinary people, and probably from political leaders as well. I doubt that there are very many in the know in government who know exactly what is being sprayed and how awful it is. I mean, it's a toxic nightmare. But that's what the substance is, and therein is the real importance that nobody should be doing this, because it harms virtually all creatures. There's good reason to think, for example, that the demise of the bees is caused by aluminum poisoning. Some studies have found that bees, aluminum gets to their brain, and they act like they have Alzheimer's. They just don't function as normal bees do, and they die off. And this is ultimately what will happen to virtually all creatures of the earth if this kind of spraying continues to go on for year after year. So anyway, that's the sum and substance of what was revealed.
Dr. Herndon, you mentioned the coalfly ash had began to be mandated to be trapped back in 2011, but it was being trapped before that and probably used, as you pointed out from your scientific paper, that it's definitely on the surfaces of our environment, but it was probably being trapped way before 2011. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think the 2011 date, if I'm correct in this, refers to a date after which no one in the U.S., no industry in the U.S., could release coal fly ash up smokestacks. But clearly it was being trapped long before that and stored typically in lined ponds. And there's also a big effort these days to find commercial uses for coal fly ash, which is, there's some matters of concern there, but not nearly the importance of spraying this stuff into the atmosphere.
How much of this material are we talking about? What form does it take when it's removed from the scrubbers? Can you give us an idea of what it looks like, what color it is, what the texture is?
I think the number of tons per year that's produced is something like 140 million tons. That's a number I've run across somewhere. And it's very fine particles, and many of them are sort of spherical, and with sizes down to a micron and less. And the smaller particles are the worst, because the many of the trace elements like mercury plate the little grains. They condense while they're hot. They as they're cooling, they condense onto the small grains. The smaller grains tend to have a greater surface area and hence greater amount of these toxic chemicals. And of course, the smaller grains are the most desirable for spraying because they stay into the air longer. And I don't know, for example, whether the government has contracts with the coal producers to sort out the extra fine grains for their particular use. Obviously, they must be buying this stuff in great quantity from the coal burners, mostly the utilities.
Dr. Herndon, I suspect you're one of the first well-known scientists to contribute to this part of geoengineering research. And as you know, the aerosol operations have been deployed aggressively, some say for the past 8 to 10 years globally, and it's covert. The public is not in the know. We're essentially lied to about the massive operations. What prompted you to speak out and publish research on this?
Well, when it became a near daily happening over my head, I wondered, well, what is the stuff they're spraying? And there was no information out there. Now, you mentioned the scientific community. And this actually goes back to my earlier paper on the corruption of science. The scientific community has acted in a most disgusting way. Science should be all about truth and finding a more precise understanding of nature. But the academic community, mostly university scientists and those research institutions that get a lot of money from the government, as do the universities, the scientists talk about geoengineering as if it is something that might need to be done in the future. Moreover, they talk about putting material to reflect sunlight high into the stratosphere, the upper atmosphere, and they do not mention what has been going on for, I would say, about 15 years. And that is the spraying of substances, the coal fly ash, I believe, and probably other things on an intermittent basis for purposes of experiment. This is sprayed in the lower atmosphere that mixes with the air that people breathe. And the academic scientists either have their heads in the sand or they're afraid to talk about it. It goes back to what I talked about, the corruption of science. The academic scientists, their proposals for research funding are reviewed by their competitors, and they're reviewed in secret. So over a half a century, since 1951, this has been the way it is. And so it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, hey, if you're trying to get a government grant, you don't criticize anybody's work. You don't do anything other than talk about the popular view, the consensus view. You don't challenge it, because you might challenge somebody else, and they might get at you by giving you a negative review in secret. And so this has perverted the entire academic community. And it's not just in the U.S. Other nations adopted the National Science Foundation model. And so it's almost global that academic scientists just will not tell the truth if it risks their own funding.
Dane Wigington with geoengineeringwatch.org, regular guest on the show, wrote, J. Marvin Herndon, a scientist of considerable notoriety. Dr. Herndon contacted me recently to express his growing concerns about the constant toxic aerosol spraying of our planet and the obvious human health and environmental ramifications we all face from this contamination. Dr. Herndon has shown a level of courage that is so very rare in the circles of the science community. He is taking a stand on the aerosol spraying issue and making his voice heard. There are so many in academia who have sheepishly hidden themselves in the shadows while they perform whatever task is asked of them in exchange for a paycheck and a pension. Marvin, in antithesis of this, he has sacrificed much of his life and career in order to stand on his convictions. I salute Dr. Herndon's determination and courage. His recent letter to authorities in his region is below, and may his outspokenness be an example to others in the science community. You wrote a letter.
Well, I wrote to the mayor of San Diego, and I wrote a couple of letters to the chief of police in San Diego, advising them of what the evidence is for what is being sprayed, suggesting that what they should be doing is warning people who are at risk, pregnant women, young children, the elderly, people with compromised immune systems or compromised respiratory systems. These people should be warned of the health hazards. And our city officials and our chief of police have done nothing. Now, that to me, that's that there's a real problem, because I think there's something called felony child endangerment. And I mean, this is a law that the chief of police should act on. But no one seems to want to do anything. Now, you have to wonder, how did this happen? Did the U.S. Congress act in secret to allow this to be happening and to threaten people with some kind of repercussions if they, people in officialdom, with some kind of repercussions if they objected? I don't know. But I can be sure of one thing. People in Congress certainly couldn't have been told what is being sprayed and what the health effects are. Just is something that I never would have dreamed that either our country or world governments could have gotten to this state of degradation where human life and the life of the other creatures in our environment means nothing. This is a problem.
It is. It's hard to fathom the depths of insidiousness that would be required to mount an operation like this on so many levels and have it be global and massive and billions upon billions of dollars. But they certainly are saving money on the coal fly ash.
Well, they're probably getting it at a cheap price. But on the other hand, I mean, you're talking about megabucks, billions upon billions of dollars being spent, and people getting rich on it. I mean, there are fleets of aircraft working day and night to spray this stuff. The huge infrastructure. I mean, people or corporations are becoming wealthy on taxpayer dollars through this activity.
And just a short list of the damage. It alters weather patterns. It damages the ozone layer. It affects the hydrological cycle. It contributes to droughts around the globe. It accelerates wildfires, contaminates our soil, water, and air, causes radical global dimming, and exposes us, as you pointed out, in depth to toxic metal nanoparticles and thus fueling degenerative diseases. Now, as regular listeners may know, who have been trying to find out what's being sprayed by aircraft in this massive aerosol operation across the world, have been testing post-spraying rainwater and soil for chemicals that fall back to the surface. What did you find in terms of coal fly ash matching what independent researchers have found in their rainwater or soil samples?
Okay, that's a good question, because it gets right to the point of how the first evidence came forward. In looking through the literature, I saw that many people measure two elements, aluminum and barium, in rainwater. The soil samples they're hard to interpret, because you have to know what the soil contained before anything was added to it. And so you can't rely much on the soil samples that have been analyzed. But the rainwater, that's a different thing. And most people that had analyzed it analyzed simply for aluminum and barium. Yet there were a few people who analyzed for aluminum, barium, and strontium. Now that was sort of a tip-off to me, because if you picture a periodic table of the elements, you'll see that calcium, magnesium, strontium and barium and radium all are in a vertical column, the group 2A elements. And these are grouped that way because their chemical behavior is similar. If you were to take a piece of cement and analyze it, cement is what made of primarily calcium carbonate that's been cooked. You'd find that there's a lot of calcium in there, but you'd also find there's strontium and maybe some barium, because these things behave in nature sort of the same way. In fact, that's why you remember the strontium-90 from radioactive fallout?
Yes.
The reason that was so dangerous is because strontium behaves like calcium, and if you drink this stuff in milk, it'll end up in your bones. Well, when I saw the rainwater with strontium and barium in it, that made me think that whatever was being sprayed in likelihood was something natural or a product of something natural. And so the first experiments I did was when I realized this might be coal fly ash. Some people in Spain did some very thorough experiments on 23 different compositions of coal fly ash from throughout Europe, and they treated them with water. 100 grams of coal fly ash in 1 liter of distilled water for 24 hours, and then they measured what elements came out into the water and how much of them did. And aluminum comes out, strontium, barium, those are some of the pronounced ones, and a whole bunch of other things, including uranium, chromium, arsenic, manganese, I could go on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that the first thing I did it with the Current Science paper was relate the aluminum, barium, and strontium results from rainwater to what the people had analyzed. And that was the first evidence. Later, I took my own rainwater samples, and I measured. I didn't have a lot of rainwater. It hadn't been raining much in San Diego, and probably because of all the spraying.
Indeed.
But I had that analyzed by two labs and analyzed for eight different elements. And the same elements occurred in the rainwater as would be leached from coal fly ash. So that was further evidence. And so that's how the experiments that people did, they sort of provided the very basic information, but until the connection was made between the coal fly ash experiments and those measurements. You know, people measured things without being able to interpret them. But now there's a basis for interpreting the results.
How close of a match was the coal fly ash experiment leaching into the water, distilled water, and rainwater?
It's hard to make a general statement, but you could think about it as sort of a fingerprint. And if you have eight elements present, and they appear in similar proportion in both the rainwater and the coal fly ash, it's like a fingerprint. Now, the coal fly ash can have different compositions, so the match won't be perfect. But the fact that you have those elements present in both cases, I mean, what would you need otherwise? You'd need some kind of a process going on in nature, in the upper atmosphere, to extract those elements from something else. What would it be? I mean, you know, eight elements is pretty good. Mm-hmm. And I think if I had the capability that universities' labs have, you know, the really expensive, sophisticated instruments that could measure very low quantities, or if university scientists would get honest and start making the measurements, it wouldn't be just eight elements. It would probably be 20 or more that are essentially identical. They're present in roughly the same proportion.
As a scientist, it's enough of a correlation for you to put it forward in the scientific community. And I'm curious, you mentioned the concern about aluminum being released into the natural environment through acid rain eroding rock. What do you say about the presence of aluminum in rainwater as you've seen it and you've heard about it now from other independent researchers? What does that tell you about aluminum actually being naturally released? Is that even possible?
Oh, I think it's definitely, and I'm only, what I'm seeing with the rainwater is just what's released up in the sky, up in the atmosphere. The stuff that they spray in the lower atmosphere, it ultimately ends up in the soil, in the air we breathe, in the some of it going through your eyes, through your skin. It all comes down. It doesn't just stay up there forever. And it provides a source of aluminum when it gets wet. Aluminum in a chemically mobile form. Mm. Plants do not live comfortably in that environment. It's known from back in the acid rain days and from the studies that were made then, what happens to plants that are exposed. I mean, it kills forests. It's bad stuff. You can see that this is a toxic nightmare. And this is where the real deceit has come in, because I'm sure our lawmakers in all of their normal not paying much attention to detail, never ask what's being put up there and how deadly it is. Or if they ask, they were lied to. Because who in their right mind would allow something as toxic as that to be sprayed on a daily basis throughout our nation and throughout the world, for that matter? I mean, this is bad stuff.
Yeah, it's a good question. Who in their right mind would allow that? And what you're pointing to, and a lot of other researchers in this area have pointed to, that it's a very sophisticated apparatus that are connected at higher levels of institutions, and especially in academia, unfortunately. But I think people are becoming aware of that. And you recently had some issues come up with pressure coming down on the publication Current Science. And the editor had gotten a lot of critical feedback regarding your specific paper. Can you?
Well, the editor did the correct thing in that instance. He asked me to respond, and I responded with a short paper, in fact.
Yeah, well, Dr. Herndon, can you start from the beginning here? What happened in terms of the criticism and the static that you've received?
Well, here's the story. In a nutshell, shortly, almost immediately after it was published in Current Science, the editor contacted me and sent me the comments that somebody had sent. And they were, I mean, it was like a whole grocery list of comments, and asked me to respond. And I responded in writing, which showed very precisely that those comments were nonsense. And I guess he asked the person for permission to quote their name to list as you know, and the people then backed off and said no. Or the person said no, you can't publish my comments under my name. So that just they said then that they didn't need this paper. Well, they've come under pressure once again. I don't know. Will they publish? It's hard to know. I mean, there's an enormous amount of pressure being brought to bear by people who basically lie. I mean, this is what they do. They tell lies. Let me quote you a couple of quotes from the ones that were sent to Current Science.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Okay. This is only a few of the comments. These are quotes. The general tone of the article is just strange and inadequate in a scientific journal. The article uses very low-quality, unscientific references such as various conspiracy theorist websites and their unreliable data. Reading the entire paper, it is clear that Dr. Herndon's goal is to spread a known conspiracy theory called chemtrail conspiracy theory while providing completely invalid and unscientific evidence for it. This conspiracy theory has no scientific basis, and it is pure fabrication. I mean, this is bullshit. Oops, shouldn't use things like that. But you could fertilize a garden with such statements. And there were a lot more. And in this, I refute each one.
It is. It's really interesting because I don't want to speculate too much on where this is coming from in terms of, has this person not really seen what's going on in the sky? Have they not been paying attention? Or they know what's going on and they're trying to cover it up and trying to keep that information from being revealed within the scientific community?
If I had to speculate, I would say that this is part of a well-funded, systematic attempt to deceive people. Probably a contract, a U.S. government contract or subcontract. Or it could be an agency like CIA, but I doubt it. They probably would contract that out.
I've got a feeling deep inside, oh yeah.
We're speaking with returning guest Dr. J. Marvin Herndon, who has recently published a scientific paper titled Evidence of Coal Fly Ash Toxic Chemical Geoengineering in the Troposphere, Consequences for Public Health. We'll be right back after this break.
No.
Yeah.
I've got a feeling.
Just joined us, we're speaking with Dr. J. Marvin Herndon about his recently published scientific paper, Evidence of Coal Fly Ash Toxic Chemical Geoengineering in the Troposphere, Consequences for Public Health. Dr. Herndon, as a scientist, you're looking at this and you're thinking, wait a minute, we're all breathing this. Why would they defend releasing poison in the air? I don't understand it.
Well, I don't either. I mean, why would people who want to breathe this stuff, why would they want to do it to their own families? I mean, at least some of the people know, but I think many of the people are afraid to say anything because they're afraid they'll lose their jobs or something of that nature. And then there's also another aspect of the picture. Let me tell you about a friend I have who is a long-term environmentalist. And he's married to a very intelligent woman who actually operates as the CEO of a publishing company. Well, he's been interested in what's going on in the atmosphere for a long time. His wife doesn't want to hear it. She refuses to acknowledge that it's happening. And I've seen this with other people. I think there's something in human nature that causes people not to want to see danger that is in front of them. I can't help but think back to World War II in Nazi Germany. There were a lot of rumors in the Jewish communities about what was happening to those people who were taken and put on trains and never seen again. And yet, there were a lot of people who simply refused to believe what they had heard. They couldn't accept in their own mind that there was some kind of a horrible thing happening. So I think there's this element of human nature, and it's being exploited by the governments that are engaged in this activity. You wonder why they're engaged in it? And I know one thing, the military is having a field day, being able to test all of their different ways to control the weather and perhaps control populations. There's an interesting book called Clouds of Secrecy, The Army's Germ Warfare Test Over Populated Areas by Leonard A. Cole. And this is... It tells you a great deal about what happened. This was copyrighted in 1988, but it tells you a great deal about what had happened in the past. This was before the kind of spraying we're talking about. And, they did germ warfare experiments over San Francisco, for example. Made people sick. Allegedly caused some deaths. The military doesn't seem to mind poisoning people. They did it with the radioactive test, too. And God knows what they're spraying now. But they're using this complete freedom to do whatever they want in the air, to develop all of their technology to control and weaponize weather. So if you are a dissenting country, well, you know, they'll cause a drought, starve your people, unless you toe the line. I mean, this is the future, and it's a dark future. There are allegations that this is being practiced in Iran. I wouldn't know. That's a complicated situation in itself. But the fact is that nobody should be contaminating the very air that people breathe. People have to breathe air. I mean, if we don't breathe for a few minutes, we're going to be dead. So, I mean, this is the worst kind of inhumanity that's taking place. And it's being done on a big scale, indiscriminately. And it's being done on the basis of misrepresentation and deceit. And that is the worst part of it. Mahatma Gandhi, you know what he did about leading India to become free of the British Empire. He made a statement something to the effect that truth never hurt a cause that is just. But boy, we're not seeing any truth in this. We're seeing deceit, disinformation, and it's not a just cause. I mean, this is bad, and there'll be generations. I mean, we're experiencing enormous rises in the rates of neurological diseases. Yet at the same time, the pollution from factories has been decreasing. So where is this pollution coming from that's involved in the neurological diseases?
Right, and you've pointed it out. You've done, you've stepped up courageously as other scientists should at this time do the same thing. I wondered if you've inspired other scientists or colleagues to come forward and speak about geoengineering.
I haven't seen any of them come out of the woodwork yet. There may be more who would if they thought that others would and that there would not be consequences. I mean, this may be the first step. I'm actually just kind of new to this whole thing because, you know, I've been working on it for, a year and a half, whereas Dane Wigington has been at it since 2004 or some great long time and done incredible things. There are people all over Europe who are very active. And in fact, there's a big meeting in Athens on October 4th that I'm giving a presentation via audio, or video rather, mm-hmm. and that are the activists trying to prevent this happening.
We talked a little bit about the air bases and where these aircraft could be flying out of to distribute this coal fly ash, this material, up into the troposphere. And we were just kind of talking about it, and you mentioned that, well, there were a lot of air bases in the 90s decommissioned and sold to private corporations, and that could be a clue as to...
That could have been why they did that, not just to get rid of the bases, but to make that possible. There's also another possibility that is, right now, it's just... To me, it's just incredible speculation.
Right.
A pilot told me something, and he had been observing trails coming out of certain commercial aircraft.
Oh, yes.
And it occurred to me that coal fly ash is a very fine powder. You asked me this earlier. It's fine powder. Sometimes it's tan color, sometimes a little darker, but... distributed in the atmosphere, you just see it as white because of this reflecting sunlight. But it could be put into jet fuel, where jet fuel is distributed to airports. It could be put into in limited quantity. It could be added to jet fuel along with perhaps some chemical that helps to keep it suspended, so that it's just suspended in the jet fuel, and it just gets pumped into planes and goes out of the engine exhaust. That's another possibility. I don't have any firsthand information except what a pilot told me he had observed.
We've heard about that, and some of the criticism to that possibility was, well, wouldn't those particulates eventually gum up fuel systems?
No, because what people don't realize maybe is that some particles can stay in solution for a long time, where they mine phosphate rock in Florida, for example, the finely divided phosphate rock, will stay in water for 2 years before it begins to settle out. Aircraft fuel, in a week, it's gone. From the time it leaves the producer to the time it goes out of the jet engine, it's a week is at the most it stays there. And plus you can add chemicals to the fuel that help to keep it suspended. That you've seen the almond drinks they sell in grocery stores that are milk substitutes made of finely ground almonds.
Yes.
And you pour it out and it's suspended particles, but it's like milk. Particles stay in suspension a long time, they can. And so it really wouldn't be a problem, and jet engines aren't very complicated. I mean, you just basically mix fuel and air and burn it. I mean, you know, you have the turbine compressors for the air, but I mean, you don't have piston systems and things like that. It's a very simple kind of process. So no, that would be certainly feasible. I don't know anything about it personally, but it wouldn't surprise me. But there again, it has another potentially bad effect. If you're taking coal fly ash and spraying it out of with a pump from a tanker jet, it comes out essentially as coal fly ash, cold coal fly ash. If you're putting it through a jet engine, you're mixing it with air and water, carbon compounds from the fuel. So you're possibly forming toxic compounds at high temperatures that could even be organic compounds. This is another potential hazard to people and the critters of Earth. There's no safe way of dealing with this. I mean, this is truly a toxic nightmare. So people, I hope pilots will expose what is going on. Their observations are most important, because that may be the second, you know, it may be that it's more than just the tanker jets spraying it out. I've seen the tanker jets going back and forth. You've seen those. But if the commercial airlines are spraying it, then they're actually polluting the air that people breathe, because the people in the plane are breathing the local air. And if some plane has just an hour before gone through spraying that stuff, well, it'll be fairly concentrated in the air that people breathe.
Pilots are breathing it. The frequent flyers are breathing
it.
Yes,
the frequent flyers should be worried about it, and the aircraft personnel.
Yep, the flight crew breathes it all in. So there's another possible study to examine. If anyone needs any more proof, like Dane Wigington says, there's a mountain of evidence. There's no shortage of it. We could just go on and talk for hours about the evidence. It's here. They're doing it. And yet still, the disinfo agents, the people who try to block your paper from publishing, all the disinfo trolls used the these are just contrails argument. And for some reason, it still works. I don't understand it. All these incredible documentaries have come out showing that it is being done, to the point where even Monsanto has the aluminum-resisted seed. A lot of people say it's Agenda 21 and connected into all of that, and geoengineering is just one aspect of Agenda 21. But ultimately, you've pointed out something very valuable to a lot of geoengineering researchers out there, and it's great to hear that you're getting a lot of attention in Europe, because I think that they're very aggressive in trying to get to the bottom of that. And whenever I talk with people who have gone to Europe to visit or on a short vacation, I often hear, you wouldn't believe what they're doing to the sky out there.
Oh, it is terrible, too. Now, have you heard by any chance the song that just came out about 3 weeks ago on YouTube called America Wants the Beautiful.
Yes. Yeah, it's on your YouTube channel.
Yes. Kate Willens, the beautiful voice, did that. Well, pretty soon, I think about October the 4th, with the introduction at the Greek meeting, there'll be another one based upon the European anthem.
Oh, wow.
Are you familiar with the European anthem?
I'm not.
This is actually... That's actually the music is to Beethoven's Ode to Joy, but the Europeans didn't want to take Schiller's words because he was German, and so the Europeans don't really have a lyrics to this, and so I wrote lyrics to the European anthem, and. So that will be coming out, and that's the one that's presented in Greece will be sung by a Spanish lady named Lua, who just happens to be not only a performer but a medical doctor. And as soon as that comes out, then Kate has also recorded it, and so we'll release it over here. But it's more about. To get the Europeans to wake up and see what's happening, and just trying to get the word out.
That's right. Well, Dr. J. Marvin Herndon, there's so many areas to continue with this discussion. There are, we always say it's 101 uses for geoengineering, but specifically your work in publishing a number of scientific papers, specifically the one titled Evidence of Coal Fly Ash, Toxic Chemical Geoengineering in the Troposphere, Consequences for Public Health. This is what we've been talking about in this show. Dr. Herndon, I want to thank you for being on In Other News.
I thank you, and I will tell you just briefly that the journal where that paper was published came under assault by the disinformation people, and they retracted the paper based on a set of lies, misrepresentation. And that is going to be the coming battleground for the future, because where I'm concerned, because it's an affront to science, it's an affront to humanity. It's not going to rest until truth and reason come back into existence. So that's that you can count on for the future. Maybe sometime in a few months we can do an update on it.
I'd love to do that. That's a great idea. In fact, I was going to suggest that as well. But I guess they didn't know that they were talking to the author of the other article, The Corruption of Science, in Dot Connector magazine. So,
no, I guess they didn't. But, you know, it's the one thing that I find numbers of people come to me and offer support for this because they don't believe the basis that was provided for this retraction. And this will be a matter of international scientific concern, I mean, at the highest levels. So we'll see what shakes.
Well, Dr. Herndon, thank you so much for doing this great work. It's very courageous, and we need 1,000 more people like you.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Enjoyed it.
Same here. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again Friday, 3 a.m.
Life in the city is not very pretty. It seems such a waste of your time.